You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
You know, there's various levels of butterflies, and then there's a certain level of it to where you almost sick to your stomach.
Well, we don't want you to get sick
to your
stomach.
Well, no, I mean, once it got going, it was easy, and then I couldn't believe it was over. So, yeah.
Well, that's how this is going to go.
I know.
This is going to last about an hour, or maybe a little more. And something else, if you see me taking the headphones off, looking at this, if you ever see me not looking at you, I'll mostly be looking at you. It's just because I need to keep an eye on things.
Do I need to just continue talking?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah.
Absolutely. Don't let it distract you. Don't let it bother you. All right, so right now, let's get some mic levels.
Check. Test 1, 2. Bit of a high talker.
Tommy Starr hanging out with you on the Sound Atlas and in the studio, in the hot seat, whatever we say, with me tonight is the one and only Johnny Thompson.
Hey, gang. It's so great to be here at this historic facilities in downtown Bowling Green, Kentucky. What a trip.
Yeah. Go ahead and tell everybody where you are in case they don't know where you
are.
Well,
I don't necessarily know where I am. I'm in Production C at Legendary WDNS, Bowling Green's Hot FM. But, I mean, that's
College
the studio
Street.
That we're, yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't come in the College Street entrance.
Shh. Keep that quiet, man. Can't let that stuff out.
Down the chimney.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Down the chimney. That's what you said.
That's right.
Anyway, so Johnny Thompson here with us tonight. We're going to be talking about music and guitars and just whatever, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Two great topics.
Yeah. So one thing that I would like to go ahead and talk about up front first is what you're currently doing and what you were doing just before you got here this evening.
Oh, well... Jack of all, master of none. I was actually came straight here from my proverbial day job, which is actually afternoons and evenings, mm-hmm. where I run a group and private lesson and recording facility in downtown Scottsville known as Scottsville Conservatory. So I get the luxury of getting to sit on my duff and do monkey tricks on guitar and riff with kids of all ages. Mm-hmm. That's
so you are an instructor.
Yes, instructor. Uh-huh. Yes, I like that.
What all do you teach?
Well, of course, guitar is my principal, my first love. But I have a lot of piano students, just about all manner of stringed instruments, mm-hmm. violin, cello, mandolin, banjo, bass. Anything with strings for the most part. Drums.
I don't think drums have strings, do they?
No, they don't, except if you want to count those snare chains. Those are kind of like...
Well, I guess so.
You've seen chains in lieu of strings on
a
guitar, right?
Unlike a Dokken video from back in the day.
That's right.
Breaking the chains. People are looking it up right now. Dokken,
yeah,
breaking the chains.
They should.
A very cheesy video from way back in the 80s. So
it wasn't cheesy back then, though.
Well, yeah, but about 5 minutes later, it was.
It was,
That's
yes.
right. At first, they were like, that is so cool. And then the next day, oh, man, they said, well, sorry, we already shipped it out. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
But that didn't keep him from being invited to participate in hearing aid.
That's right. Yeah. Those who are wondering, what are we talking about? George Lynch, guitarist for Dokken.
Yes.
Go look on YouTube, Dokken Breaking the Chains, and it's a very corny video from the 80s.
Yeah, there's nothing corny about that guy's chops.
No, George Lynch can play the hell out of a guitar.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
He's
right.
up there on the upper levels.
You got that right. So you just came from your day gig. How long have you been doing that?
Golly, I formally hung out my shingle in January of 2006.
You've been
That's
doing
been
this
my
a while.
Second home for, you know, a good solid 12 years. I mean, I did it informally at the YMCA before it became the Corps, and I did it in Louisville before... My car broke down and I washed ashore in Allen County
so
back
you,
in 2001.
You actually taught guitar at the YMCA? Was that one of those deals where folks make, they say, hey, I want to meet you Friday at 5 o'clock, and you drive over there and you set up in a little room they put you in, like that?
You know what? A small, tight-knit community, when you're an outsider, is a tough nut to crack.
Of course.
And that's understandable. I'm not in the same way. I don't cotton to strangers at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to build up a clientele base.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a necessary step, and it was not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so grateful for the opportunity. I mean, I had a sweet gig doing this in Louisville before I came down at a private school up there. But at the YMCA, it was often moving from room to room within the course of a day. And all my instruments, you know, they'd come with and then leave with each night.
Yeah.
But it was a necessary step. After, you know, a few years of that, maybe 2 years, I had enough to where I could just kind of start my own place.
Yeah.
Which I did.
Hey, everybody has to go through stuff like that to kind of get going, and you appreciate things a lot more when you have to work for it, right?
Agreed.
That's what our parents told us, and we're believing it now.
And they were right. Yeah.
They were right.
They're always right.
They were right. So did you ever have to sit up by the pool at the YMCA for a lesson and say, could you stop splashing?
No, but there was just about every other room in there was used at some point for, and often not convenient for the people whose office it was or me either. So
that was still nice that they let you do that.
It's super nice. Yeah. That's how I got my start here in Allen County. Yeah. So
and a lot of good people in Scottsville, and you got a lot of great students. A lot of them I've met through the years.
Absolutely.
Had them here at the station. Right. A lot of talent.
It's funny how much time has gone by, but I've had a handful of extraordinary students and a good median of average students, and then God love them, the pony rides, which, you know, pay the bills.
That's right. So
if following music is an avocation, not a vocation.
Well, you know, if they're looking, we'll throw this out here in a little advertisement for you. If folks are looking, how can they find you in Scottsville? If they're like, you know what, little Billy wants to learn how to play guitar.
And then they should come say hello. We have a great Facebook page at Scottsville Conservatory. You know, it's in the Washington Center, which is an old overall factory one block off the square in downtown Scottsville. And there's a sign right on the side of the building with a phone number, and you can just call and get on the list.
That's right. Get on the list. Find you on Facebook and all that stuff, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the Scottsville Conservatory.
Yes.
Everybody check that out. Again, Johnny Thompson's hanging out with me today on the Sound Atlas. And you have a long history in local music, we'll say, here in the BG area and up in Louisville and circling back around to Scottsville. But I would like to go back to some of the earlier days and talk about little figures that I saw cut out on telephone poles and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's funny how we saw one another's flyers back in the day.
Oh, you saw my flyers back
absolutely.
In the day?
We had the Crank It poster with Angus for your New Rock show. What was the name of that show?
I had many
Blasting
shows.
Fast. Was it Blasting Fast?
I had, there were so many. I had Crank It. I had the Electric
Crank It
Circus.
Was the name of the show, right?
Yeah, Crank It.
That's
they were all metal
we
shows.
Had right in the abode, the Walden Home for Wayward Boys on
you guys
University Boulevard.
Ripped one of my posters down and stuck it in your place there, huh?
I don't know how we came into its possession.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you supporting it from your home.
Yeah.
On the wall.
A lot of people saw it.
Yeah. Well, that's what's important, that they saw it and that they tuned in to listen.
That's right.
Yeah. But let's talk about some of those flyers back in the day. What band was that?
Well, there was two bands, not including a few rare post ones in my solo career. The Park Avenue Dregs is where those started, and they just continued on through Envy Estate. Two of my main bands I played with during my Bowling Green years.
Yeah. Now, you're originally from Nashville, aren't you?
Yeah, born and raised.
Yeah. So you came up
got
this
out
way?
When the getting was good.
Well, as far as you know.
As far as I know.
That's right.
I don't know.
You still go back, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, so you didn't really get out.
As close as it is and as little as I go back, I kind of did get out.
Well, let's hope Mom and Pop's not listening right now. But so you came up from Nashville to go to Western. What were you going to Western for? What was your plan?
The plan was, well, the initial plan is I wanted to study music.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just not going to be bankrolled by my parents.
Yeah.
They knew, I guess, what a difficult, or just maybe after listening to me play growing up, how impractical it would be to find any lasting success or financial security in pursuing music. But that is where my heart lay. Yeah. But I came up here pre-vet, which is weird because I had an internship with a vet the summer before coming up here.
Yeah.
And I think I decided during that summer, I was like, I can't do this. Is it putting tubes in horses' noses and telling senior citizens their only companion's got to be put down? I just can't. I didn't realize it was that brutal. I love animals, but I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I got there's a glimpse into it.
There's the hard side, too.
The first day of Intro to Animal Science, zing! Uh-huh. It all went over my head. You have to be born into that. Raised on a farm. I'm like, mister, I don't understand a word that's coming out of your mouth. And so I quickly dropped out. I failed to withdraw. Uh-huh. So that made a nice 0.0.
Man, they get you when you don't do that. Yeah.
So, but I decided I wanted to play. I want to do music. So I was still living on campus in this tailspin of knowing I was no longer enrolled and all financial ties cut.
Parents didn't know, did they?
They figured it out pretty quick. By
but
October,
you were
kind of
hiding
knew,
a little bit, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, you don't want people to know that you're just sitting in the lobby of your dorm trying to acquire a practice regimen like Vivian Campbell, somebody that's playing 4 hours a day minimum. That's what I wanted to do.
So
that didn't last.
You were in Nashville. You came up to Bowling Green. They were thinking vet school. You took a couple classes. You were like, hell no.
Right.
And I really want to do music. And they were like, hell no.
Yeah.
And so how did that work out? So did the money all dry
yes,
up and you just
absolutely.
Stayed?
Absolutely. I was on my own from the day I turned 18.
Yeah.
That's when I had to get a jobby job down here at Wendy's, store number 2 on the bypass. Hey, you'd laugh, but I was employee of the month in April of 87.
I worked at Whitney's at one time too. You gotta go through that. So in 1987 you're flipping burgers at Wendy's.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you had a job.
Flipping all kinds of things at Wendy's. Yeah.
You had a job.
I had a job.
You were
I did.
Make some money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you got to pay bills.
That's right.
Rent, electricity.
That's
stuff
right.
like that you didn't think about when you wanted to be a guitarist.
Back when they were saying, turn that light off, you're not using it, that costs money. And you're
oh
like, what are you talking
gosh,
about?
Gosh, that is my religion now.
Yeah.
I loathe waste. It's a big game to me. How much energy can I save?
Yeah.
I didn't turn on the air conditioning this summer.
That's ridiculous. What are you thinking? It was
at
hot.
At a savings of hundreds of dollars.
But you were miserable.
I was miserable anyway.
Well, you're a skinny little fella, so you could probably do that. I couldn't do that. I got to have some air. What are you talking about?
The trick is to never be home.
No. Enjoy other people's air conditioning. This guy's been in Walmart for hours.
Practicing guitar
nice
in the foyer.
It's wonderful. So you're Wendy's in 1987. You're hanging out in Bowling Green. You're thinking, I dig music. Are you thinking, I need to get a band, form a band? Or does
well,
somebody go,
I had
oh,
a
you
band.
Got a guitar?
I had a band formed the summer before I even came up to Western with a rival band leader. You know, we all had high school bands.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we paired up. His name's James Hall. And our first year at Western, we had a great band called James Joplin and the Park Avenue Dregs, and regular at Picasso's. That's where I cut my teeth. That was my first steady, live performance on a stage through a real PA system and lights and everything that came with that.
It You're was, like, I'm a rock star.
Yeah, I sure felt like it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I acted like it too.
Yeah.
Good and bad.
Yeah. So you guys were doing that for a while. Then I believe he kind of cut out, went somewhere else, moved away.
Yeah. His RA was Steve Gorman of the Black Crowes, who convinced James to parlay his talents down in Atlanta. And he had a phenomenal band down there and then worked down to New Orleans, lost everything in Katrina, and is back kind of a staple of the Atlanta music scene.
Really?
Super, super talented guy.
Yeah. So he and Steve had a little something going
long
absolutely. Before the Black Crowes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How cool is that?
It is kind of cool to
that
connect
is cool.
the dots. I'm fascinated with degrees of separation because it's... You know, it's not many clicks until you're, you know, in touch with somebody who is in touch with like one of your biggest idols.
Sure.
That's crazy.
And so you
turns my crank.
Somehow figure into the Black Crowes kind of on a weird way.
Yeah, because he sat there and critiqued us rehearsing.
Yeah.
And just give us all kinds of grief. And I was always under my breath. What do you know about it? Well, apparently he knew enough to be in one of the biggest rock bands in America.
Sure.
And, yeah.
So James goes on, and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to be... Were you the head honcho then for the non?
Yes. Well, I mean, by default.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is, you know, James was a prolific songwriter. Mm-hmm. We learned all these songs. We were all in our mind. You know, Government Cheese was on the cusp of... of being the next REM, and therefore we would be on the cusp of being the next government cheese and therefore the next REM. So we had all this great, you know, alternative Paisley Underground type music going on, but they were all James's songs. And when he left, he goes, yeah, you can have them.
Really?
Yeah. So we hobbled along as a three-piece, and then it's like, well, it's time, I guess, to start writing some songs. Mm-hmm. Man.
Did you write Resurrect Me?
Absolutely.
Okay, because I really love that song.
That was one of the first ones where I'm like, I could maybe do this songwriting thing. But there were some others from that era that's like, man, put it back in. This thing's not done. It's because if you don't know what you're doing, no formal music education, and that's an asset and a liability.
Exactly, because I'm like, why does everything have to be just like the formula? Because sometimes it's best if it's nowhere near the formula.
That's where you get, you know, I think the only... I will never be the guitar jock on the level that I dreamed of during my formative years. Your only recourse when you realize you're never going to be on that level of playing is really originality. And that's when you don't know what you're doing or are fearless and mashing things that don't go together. You're going to kick over an original rock or two along the way.
Well, don't you think that pretty much all the greats, guitar players, they all kind of, I want to be like this guy.
Sure.
And they kind of do like that guy.
Yeah.
And then they kind of get their own thing going. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't escape your influences.
Yeah.
So stuff leaves a mark. You'll hear it.
You like Yngwie a little bit, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yngwie, you know, grew up big fan of Ritchie Blackmore. Of course,
and Hendrix.
The scalloped neck and all, which is what Ritchie did, and that's what Yngwie does.
Right.
But then eventually he kind of came out of that and became Yngwie Malmsteen.
Right.
Yeah.
It sounds, you can hear little bits and pieces of the influence, but
Yeah. So guitars. We're talking about guitar players. Who are some of your favorite guitar players?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, as a kid, speed was king.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted, you know, when, you know, you heard... You know, I was a big Rush aficionado. That was the first hard rock that I really got into and thought, this guy can't be topped as a guitarist. And then...
Talking about Alex Lifeson.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you learn all that stuff and you know, start learning how to play lead guitar by trying to emulate your heroes. And along this time, you know, other kids in the neighborhood are listening to Van Halen. And you're like, oh, you know, this is way... more over the top than this other stuff I've been listening to. And then Metallica hits, and you think that's the hardest thing you've ever heard. And then you hear Slayer, and it's like, what? It just, where's the ceiling on this stuff? Mm. And for me, you know, I've always had kind of a broad listening spectrum, a lot of Led Zeppelin, a lot of, yes, I love Steve Howe's guitar playing. But when Yngwie hit, that's all that mattered for a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then... At kind of the apex of the LA metal scene, where just, you know, people were just constantly trying to outdo each other.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Night Ranger, you know, all the just the extremities of it, and it still goes on. People still are trying to one up.
Absolutely.
The guitar game, and I think that's the way it should be.
Those you named, you kind of took us through like stuff that you grew up with. What are some that today, because there's always those that kind of filter out, and there's a couple that always kind of, this guy's one of my favorites, and anytime he does something, I try to kind of give it a look or a listen to see what he's up to these days. Give me a couple like that.
Jeff Beck. Hands down.
Yeah.
Danny Gatton is an amazing guitarist.
Sadly, no longer with
us. Yeah. I guess one of my big influential guitarists is this British cat named Steve Hillage.
Mm-hmm.
Played with a psychedelic band called Gong back in the 60s and then did his solo stuff through the 70s. That is who I try to most emulate in my lead work. Just super melodic.
Say his name again.
Steve Hillage.
We want people to check that out.
Yeah, you should check out Steve Hillage. He's got a vast body of work. But I got taken by a coworker at Wendy's to go see Pink Floyd in Philadelphia in 1987, maybe 88. And that's where he introduced me to Steve Hillage. And I was just like, what? This is my music. So
yeah,
there's a bit of that still seeps in every now and then. I'll be like, God, that sounds like Steve Hillage.
So maybe he's the guy.
He might be. Yeah. He's my cosmic god.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Steve Hillage. Everybody check him out on the interweb there.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the early days of the Dregs. You guys released a couple of things, didn't you?
We did. You know, we actually recorded, the first time we recorded was in the spring of 87 at WoVo under the tutelage of Dave Barrick, and I think that was 4-track.
At the radio station.
Yes, it may have been 8-track, but I think it was 4-track. And we did 4 songs. James left a month later.
Yeah.
So we went back and retracked the vocals. David let us back in, and we just redid the vocals. Yeah. None of us were as good a singer as James, so it was a real downgrade for the material.
Do you have any copies of those original tunes with James?
Yes, I'm a hoarder. I guarantee it's somewhere in the vault.
I don't know that I have heard those with James. I think
they're totally
different. To hear.
Yeah, but I dig it a lot, but it's totally different than what I tried to do when I started writing.
You're going to have to let me hear that at some point. I'd like to hear that.
I need to bring that in. That's neat time capsule stuff. So another couple of years went back. We lost all our audience because, you know, people, it just wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a good singer nor a songwriter, and it's hard to fill the space that a 4-piece does with 3-piece. You know, we had a transition to go, and we lost our bass player shortly, another year into the process of me trying to be the singer-songwriter for the band. And then we brought in Keith Herrick, who was a friend of our drummers from E-Town, and we were all friends from back in our first years at Western, and we stuck with it. That was what we were going to do. We practiced every day. That was pretty much the remainder of my 80s and the first part of the 90s for me.
So is there any way to hear any of the Dregs? Do you have any of that? Do you sell any of that?
Absolutely,
yeah. Is it on YouTube?
Sure. We released digitally. I mean, after a couple of years after James left, we had enough songs with the new lineup that we returned to David Barrick's, still at WoVo, this time definitely 8-track, and did our first album called Haunted. And that was digitally re-released maybe 3 years ago. So it's on iTunes, and you can search for that on YouTube or anything. The Park Avenue Dregs, Haunted.
All right, so everybody jump on YouTube and look for those again.
Yeah, Haunted by the Park Avenue Dregs. That's the only old Park Avenue Dregs that's actually available for purchase, be it hard copy or online download type stuff.
The listening pleasure.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're going to come back around because the Dregs kind of come full circle, but we'll get
to
that.
They kind of do, right?
That's right. We'll get to that. But after the Dregs, things kind of went, you know, south, I guess.
And oh, boy. You could sure say that.
Envious state. I don't know how south you want to talk, but you can.
All the way south.
Well, what happened? Was there something?
Well, I mean, just, you know, we're kids. And by kids, I mean anybody that's younger than me now, which is on the cusp of 50. You know, when you are young, I'm driving into town today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, I won't go into details, but it's like, this place is like revisiting a nightmare for me. And I thank God every day to be delivered from that. I'm not generally this preachy, but I can't drive into Bowling Green without going, thank you for closing the door on that chapter of my life. So and it wasn't just me. We all had our incidents and stuff. We did get out one more great recording that unfortunately the DAT master is lost. That was Hexignia, and that was 16-track at WoVo also.
Yeah.
It's probably one of my all-time favorite recordings, but the few hard copies of cassettes are the only remaining evidence of it.
So it has to have the hiss these days.
It's got to have that hiss.
Maybe that's just part of the song.
Sure, right.
Yeah, it becomes part of the song.
People going...
What are they frying in the background?
Indeed.
We're cooking some stuff up. So we go into Envious State. Is this a whole new band, a whole new lineup?
It kind of is, in a weird way. But then it just really is the Park Avenue Dregs 2.0 with 15 members. And the Dregs started, you know, leaning that way with guest performers, you know, 4-piece horn section, adding a keyboard, having a fiddle jump up here and then a full gospel choir one time we tried to do. So we weren't strangers to trying things off the beaten path. But once we had kind of an implosion or a good stopping point. Yeah, we formed the next band, which is basically Carrie Pruitt and I were hanging out a lot and playing a lot of old jazz standards, and we call that Project Oldsmophilia. Mm-hmm. And I continued to write, and Pete Lentz would come and go. And then along the ways, yeah, a revolving door of bass players and guitarists. And there are several great chapters of that band, Envy Estate. Many of them, no one hardly saw, you know, because it's just...
Did you guys not play out much or short-lived band? Or?
We did well here in Bowling Green. We played out regular. In fact, one of the best chapters of the band was probably in 95, 94. We were weekly performing at Gary's and then Thursdays. Yeah. Wild, off, out-of-control times. But at that moment, that's where I'm like, I'm going to do music full-time. Yeah. Quit my job, and that's all it did. And they were really lean years, but you can't... It doesn't matter when you're doing what you love. It was just fun. And I had, at this point, a guitarist. It was like having a bodyguard. I was free to wallow in my own just inane stage antics and ramblings and, and just going in 100 different directions. And I had established myself as not being conventional music. But when you have a really good guitarist inject a blues presence into anything, it somehow legitimizes it. It's like,
who's this good guitarist?
His name is Jay Henning, and he's one of the best guitarists I've ever personally known in my life. He's just a beast. The last contact I had with him was on MySpace. He had a band called Stego, and I think they won a contest, and they opened up for, I want to say, Night Ranger, some really odd
well, that's all right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
So let's go back to what I originally asked is, what about these posters, which are kind of infamous?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So where did all this come about, and explain to people what I'm talking about?
Okay. Yeah. This is, when you're in an overcrowded marketplace and everybody else is in it too, and everybody's saying me too, it's not enough to be just a decent musician to build a following. It's highly competitive, you know, to create a scene. You can't just do a gig, you know, every so often and it not be an event.
Sure.
And to ever get any momentum. So
you got to put yourself out there, and you got to make, it's got to be happening.
You got to lay it on the line.
Convince people this is the place to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, everybody's got these, you know, paper-sized flyers, and the telephone poles are littered with them. There's no place on campus to do anything. You talk about the place has really changed. There's laws. You can't put stuff on telephone poles anymore or tape things. So you're very limited, but back in the day, anything that you could get a staple gun into was fair game.
Yeah.
I never would ever cover anybody else's stuff. You know, you have to find an available space or something that's expired and take it down. But the first time I ever cut out a flyer, we played a gig at Picasso's on Pearl Harbor Day, and I drew a Japanese zero and did a second flyer, a drawing of a bomb, and cut them all out. They weren't paper shaped. This was a Japanese zero for a flyer, and then a bomb for another flyer.
Sure.
So they really stick out in a sea of rectangle shaped papers. So that was all fine and whimsical and funny, but you know, along the way, you start to kind of, I don't know.
So you started doing things that would kind of catch people's eye, that would kind of, they'd be like, what is that?
Yes. Oh, and then it's like, oh, if you wondered what that is, wonder what this is.
Yeah.
And then you start pushing the boundaries, and soon there became all these rumors swirling because... And of course, mm-hmm. you got to pour some gasoline on that Absolutely. Fire, put it out.
That's right.
And then you start putting coded messages on the back and this and that. And then it becomes this big puzzle, which backfires on you because people are going around ripping your flyers down to figure out what the message is. And,
yeah.
And then when they can't figure out what the message is, well, we need to turn them over to the police because they need to look into this because something ain't right.
It was all just fun and games.
Something
and
rotten in Bowling Green.
It was all just to get people's attention, yeah, which it did.
Absolutely, and it worked.
Yeah, but occasionally it pulls a little bit more attention than you meant.
Sure.
Yeah.
Scrutiny.
Oh, yeah. What about
more
the
scrutiny, please?
The little figure. Wasn't there like a little guy that was kind of like a mascot?
No, there was. It was basically the serrated edge of a thistle leaf. Mm-hmm. It did kind of look like guys if you looked at it in the right light.
Okay.
Yeah, just kind of holding hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what it was, just messing with people and trying to get their attention.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that's pretty cool. I think that's the way to go.
I do, too.
Yeah.
And I miss it.
Yeah.
I do. It was a lot of work. And I remember, you know, this is why I'm working full-time construction. It'd be 3 a.m. because I don't want to have the chit-chat while I'm putting these up. They have to come in the night like snowfall.
Sure.
So you put them up at like 3 a.m. and you've got to get up and... 2 hours, which is generally when I would finish cutting the last ones out. And it was...
So you would hand cut all of these flyers?
Yeah, I had some tricks where I could do more than one at a time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but they all had to be trimmed up.
Yeah.
And so detailed.
You go around town at crazy hours of the morning, put them up. So like when the class was in, they were walking back and forth to class, they'd say, oh, there's a new one. Ooh, where's this going to
yes,
be?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing stories like on local news and seeing in the background of the report, I was like, there's my flyer. You got it in your shot.
That's great. That's a lot of fun. So how long did you do that? Did you do that for a while?
I did. The first one was probably 87. And yeah, I did this. I mean, I was doing really extreme, bizarre ones by the time the last chapter of Envy Estate was going in Louisville. And that's kind of where it stopped. And that's kind of was... my last steady band gig for many years. And I've done maybe a couple for special gigs.
Here and there.
Here and there.
But yeah.
Those are few and far between.
How did you get up to Louisville?
Stayed in Bowling Green maybe up until I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, it's time for a change.
Mm-hmm.
And just up and moved to Louisville.
Yeah. Did you have a band up there waiting for
you? Yes. Yeah. Pete lived in Louisville. he left Louisville about a year after we got up there, but that year was he, Paul Hatchett, playing Hammond organ, mm-hmm. and Andy Rademacher of Three Quarters playing bass, mm-hmm. and it was probably the best band, one of the best incarnations of that band anyway I'd had, and we played Empty Rooms. You know, Louisville's a tough nut to crack, so...
Especially when you're the new kid in town.
Right. Mm-hmm. Righto.
So how long were you in Louisville?
Probably, that's a great question. I'm going to say 3 years.
You mentioned earlier that you started teaching guitar in Louisville.
Yeah.
Was that one of those kind of deals where you were working like a gig somewhere, like you maybe working at a burger joint or something? You're like, this is crazy.
I was doing odd jobs. I was doing odd construction jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And, would see this place on Bardstown Road called Flying Hands School of Music. And I just would, you know, it's just like somebody, you've got to get a job. Well, I want to work in a music store. Well, yeah, so does everybody else. You're not going to get that job.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the way I looked at a gig like that. I was like, I'll never. I mean, so I started making some flyers for the Johnny Thompson guitar method. I was going to, and that went nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I dropped one off at this place. And 6 months later, I got a call out of the blue. Just like, we needed a guitar instructor 2 weeks ago. And in my mind, I'm like, well, I'm going to have to audition and play insanely fast and be super knowledgeable. And I don't really understand music theory. Hmm. So this is going to be really, I don't know if I'm so nervous. I didn't even shut the door properly in my car. I pulled out onto 3rd Street. All my equipment goes flying out the...
Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, I was nervous. I was so excited and nervous at the same time.
Yeah.
And I get up there expecting all this trial by fire, and I'm promptly shown my room.
Oh, they're like,
we need a guitar. Yeah.
You're hired.
You're hired.
Did you bring? Oh, you brought. Okay, you're in. Here's your student list.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Just like that.
Like that.
Yeah.
And just, I've never in my life had ever loved a job. I'm grateful for every skill I've learned in jobs I have not loved. Mm-hmm. But that is the absolute first job that I did not hate.
Yeah.
And that's tantamount to love in my book. So, you know.
Let's talk about some jobs you've had in your lifetime up to that point. You mentioned Wendy's. What was your very first job?
Well, my first job was mowing lawns all summer long I was like third. But that's how I built my, that's how I bought all my guitars as a kid.
Did you really?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you must have charged a lot.
No, you just mow a lot of lawns.
Is that what you did?
Play cheap guitars.
So you're saying instead of just posting something on the internet and asking people to give you money.
There was no internet.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you went right. I know and you're mowed going. The yard.
Yeah, absolutely.
You did work.
GoFundMe, CA83. Yeah, right?
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Every time I see that stuff, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. No.
Dude, that's how it was. If you want,
right.
Parents say you want that new model kit, well, I guess you better go take the trash out.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the hardcoreness of my parents, it's like, well, you're going to have to buy a lawnmower because you've worn this one out and you've got to pay X amount towards your high school tuition. And I'm like,
what? Yeah.
That leaves only X amount for guitars.
Yeah. So past the lawnmower.
Okay.
Like where you actually went in and punched a clock.
Yeah. McDonald's, Melrose.
That was your very first.
That was my first punch clock job, yeah. And I've got stories inappropriate for even a podcast about that first job.
Yeah. Well, don't we all?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I could tell you some stories about Stubby's Barbecue in North Little Rock. But I
got nothing but time.
I ain't going to tell you, man. It involves some ribs, some hams, these two girls, a friend of mine's dad's case
girls.
Of liquor. That's all I'm saying, man.
Wow.
And a whole lot of baked beans. That's all I'm saying about that.
You can't just leave that. You can't put that on the table.
I got to. I have to leave that there. For a long time, I still had one of the shirts. And this is a job I had when I was like 17
Isn't that
years
crazy?
Old. I don't know. Sometimes things just hang around, but it's gone now. But I used to have a Stubby's Barbecue shirt with a barbecue stain on it for a really long time.
Sweet.
Yeah, I don't know why. But anyway, let's
jobs are sacred, man.
Well, yeah, you learn
stuff. They leave a mark.
From
you learn stuff.
That's right. So McDonald's, let's go with
Bill Crooks, Buy Right in Food Town, right down as a grocery job, my next job. And then came Bowling Green, and I can tell them in order. Wendy's, S.R. Blanton, Landscaping. Construction laborer, Andrews Restaurant, Carter Lumber, the Parakeet.
You worked at the Parakeet?
I sure did.
Were you a server?
No, you don't put a long hair out there to serve.
Oh, you were washing dishes.
No, I was supposed to be washing dishes, but I was cooking fireworks and throwing things and getting on top of the building for a little special break every chance I got.
Is this Parakeet like where Tidballs is
yes,
now?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, wow. So Johnny Thompson used to have a job at Parakeet, which is now Tidballs, many, many moons ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Fired summarily.
You got fired?
I got fired over an argument over romaine lettuce. which just says to me that they were looking for me to get. You know, I mean, I was right, but they needed an excuse to
say
get rid
that
of
one
the
more
problem
time.
Child.
You were fired.
What's this? It's romaine. It's not fucking romaine. Yes, it is. It's the core. It's the tender, light green core. This is the best part. You know what? Get the fuck out.
Just like that, huh?
Yeah.
Dang.
Mine was a hothead.
Romaine lettuce did you in.
It did.
Yeah.
But all sorts of other problem employee activities also did me in, so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a little something there we learned. That
right.
You at one time worked at what is now
what
Tidballs.
Became Tidballs, yeah. So I can't go in Tidballs without reliving all those
You're like, please
moments.
Tell me you don't have romaine lettuce.
Hey, there was some great music there. They had live music at the Parakeet on Saturdays. Ed Dansereau, the late Ed Dansereau, the late Bo Haddock, and sometimes joined by Webb Hendricks, would just play adult music
there
for the adults that ate at Parakeet. And it was magic to watch out of the corner. this, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about your job career. I do want to ask you about guitars a little bit, and then we'll get back on talking about some other bands and stuff.
But yeah.
Guitar-wise, what was your first guitar?
It was a guitar I bought at Nashville Music Company in Green Hills. Mm-hmm. It was owned by the Terranovas. I had electric guitaritis. I was consumed with electric guitars because the Beatles played electric guitars. I was seeing electric guitars on TV, and it would just send me into orbit. You know, yeah. I've got to have an electric guitar. That sunburst color, that color to me is electric guitar.
That's
the name of that color.
Electric guitar.
Yes. Yeah. So you would go, it was the olden days, so you would go into like a department store, Sears,
olden JCPenney, days, you're not 80.
Woolworths here on the square when yeah. I'd come through, like yeah. on the way to visit relatives. Electric guitars hanging on the wall. Just like an item like you would have at any department store. So I kept seeing ads for the PV T60. Guitar on mm-hmm. and the T40 bass in the Nashville newspapers. Hughley's Music had it. I remember I summoned the courage to call Hughley's Music one day. I was like, how much is the PV T60? It's like $350. I was like, well, he doesn't mean $3. Okay, bye. You know, $350, you couldn't even fathom that.
Yeah.
So I found this total piece of junk. It was brand new. It was supposed to come with an Ampeg amp, which would have been a pretty sweet combination, no matter what the guitar. $128. My parents like, you save up, you can get it. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking, I'm fifth grade, getting ready to
Dang,
go in fifth grade.
And they're giving you hardcore. You got to save the money.
I did. I mowed lawns all that summer. And at the end of the summer, I went and got it. But when they yeah. came to get my amp, they didn't grab the Ampeg.
Oh.
They grabbed some total cheapo, you know, something that was on par with the guitar.
Right.
So I probably got what I paid for.
Yeah.
It's priceless to me.
Do you still have that guitar?
I don't know if I do. It's like in the attic. You know, it was sunburst. And, you know, I immediately took a few lessons and was playing things like You Light Up My Life and Blue Suede Shoes and a couple of Beatles songs. Mm-hmm. My aunt bought me a Beatles complete easy guitar book, and I still play out of that book every night to this day.
You still have that same
it's
book?
It's just tattered. Yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, and I've taught kids of all ages out of that for years, and it's very watered down and accurate, but enough to learn out of and go, this is wrong, this needs to be this, and mm-hmm. this, that. So it's been a great kind of true north for me. For years, no matter what instrument I play, I'll play out of that book.
So you're saying that let's go back. So the book that you got when you first started playing guitar, you still have today.
Yes.
And you are now teaching folks out of that same book.
Sure. And
that
I play
is
out
so
of
cool.
it. I don't play guitar, but I'll play pedal steel or cello out of yeah. that Beatles book every night.
That is cool as hell.
It you is kind of neat.
You got to keep that forever.
Oh,
man.
Absolutely! It's gonna be like my Rising Force shirt. It's
yeah.
just gonna be. It's gonna disintegrate into the wind one day.
You need that guitar too. I hope you still have it.
I think it's. You know what? Yeah, I was so proud of it. Having the electric guitar, colored electric guitar, and then I think Bark of the Moon came out, and I'm like, this thing needs to be white,
uh-huh.
like Jakey Lee's guitar. So I spray painted it white. I made a huge mess out of
yeah.
things because you have to.
Do you see that thing that's flying around me? Some little bug's flying around. It was crawling on my head.
I don't
a while
see
ago.
It. It's probably a rod. It's
yeah.
probably something you're seeing with your third eye.
No, it's one right there. Anyway, they're enjoying that out listening to us talk about a bug flying around. But anyway, I do hope you have that guitar, but you spray painted it white?
Yep. It did.
So there may be a spray-painted white over electric guitar color up in your attic, possibly.
At
your
think
parents'
so.
House.
Could be.
Yeah.
I don't know what else. I mean, it could be lost.
Do your parents still live in the same house you grew up in?
No. But
they're
kind of like, I come by my hoarding honest. It's,
oh.
I mean, but they, yeah. it may have been given away. I may have drug it up here. I've lost a lot of things in Bowling
yeah.
Green. So.
Well, I hope you still have. That would be cool if you still had your first guitar.
It would be neat.
It would be neat.
I don't sell anything. I had a Hondo 2 that was sold to me. I was told it was a Gibson Les Paul.
Sure.
It looked like one. It wasn't one.
Yeah. Shaped like it.
Shaped like it. It even had the classic Les Paul custom inlay. I don't see how they didn't get sued for copyright infringement or trademark infringement.
Don't they pay for that? Or isn't there some kind of way where they are able to do that and they give them
probably
kind of covering a song?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So that was my first decent guitar. I sold it to a classmate. I bought a Kramer at the height of all things
hockey
garage band. No, it's Focus series, which had kind of a funky headstock.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the Beretta, the real high end Kramers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then later, they all had that, even the entry level ones. Mm-hmm. I sold that guitar one year to buy presents for my family.
What were you thinking?
Exactly. I regret it every day. Yeah. I wish I had that guitar.
Dang.
It's Candy Apple Red. I think like I was Alex Lifeson on the Grace Under Pressure tour.
Mm-hmm. So somebody somewhere is enjoying your guitar.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Some things get smashed.
Well, that's true too. What kind of guitars, what do you have right now guitar-wise? What's your arsenal?
All right. So from that point on, not counting things that were stolen and never retrieved or smashed and never put back together out of the million pieces, my guitars went Fender Telecaster, Fender Stratocaster, a series of just odd guitars that kind of came and went, you know, like guitars that didn't belong to me that I got to be the steward of for a while.
Yeah.
Another Stratocaster, a Les Paul, and then several along the way. You kind of lose count.
Yeah.
Like, how many guitars do you have? The answer is always not enough.
Yeah.
Not enough. I've sworn I won't ever buy another guitar, but I know better.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Well, it's ridiculous having a bunch of guitars collecting dust that you don't play. That's what happens when you've got two or three favorites and then a whole room full of ones that you don't play.
Don't you think sometimes you go back to some of those other guitars and you kind of discover or rediscover something you had forgotten about? You know, actually, this thing's got a nice, you know, whatever.
You
I'm
would
not a
think,
player. So.
But you ate lunch with me every Wednesday for years.
Uh-huh.
I always got the same old thing. If I'm a creature of routine, a creature of habit.
Pickles a lot.
I do like pickles. Do you have any here?
No, we don't. This is none of that. And there's something,
a big pickle heist
going on
outside.
In the background.
Some pickle capers.
Folks up there listening. So back to Louisville. So in Louisville, you were teaching guitar. You started digging the job. You're like, this is cool.
You
lived there for a while. Envious State was done.
Yep.
You came back down to this area and you started teaching guitar. We're kind of coming full circle.
Right.
Back at the YMCA, which is now the Core in Scottsville.
Yeah.
And then you worked your way over to your own gig, 2006 when you
2006.
Opened Scottsville Conservatory.
I started in a room roughly about the size of this production, maybe not even quite this big, but it was my first place where I could leave my instruments. They'd be locked up.
Yeah.
At night, and I didn't have to take things home, and I got things started to really gain momentum. A year later, I finished out a room in the basement that was a large room that the city stored their Christmas decorations in, and I turned it into two rooms and started the recording operation there formally, I guess, in 2007.
Now, we're going to talk in a minute about Farm Out Records, about some of the releases and all that, but speaking of records, I would like to talk about some of your favorite releases by some of your favorite bands. Who are some of your favorite bands? What are some of your favorite albums by those bands?
Oh.
Maybe some that when you have a day where you need something familiar, you go, man, I need to go get my blah, blah, blah and crank it because that always just makes me feel good.
Right. There are some all-time favorites. I love those top 10 lists and stuff like that, trying to narrow down your lasting stuff, not stuff that you
don't have to name 10, but you know, just some stuff you're into. Maybe, and especially if there's something that's a little bit like, oh, I never thought about that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I would probably say, you know, along my top all-time favorite albums, there's Amused to Death by Roger Waters. There's Nonesuch by XTC. There's Heathen by David Bowie is a fantastic album. Oh, California by Mr. Bungle. Disco mm-hmm. Volante by Mr. Bungle. Mr. Bungle by Mr. Bungle. Those are the triumvirate of just horrific.
You like a lot music. Of that stuff Mike's involved in, don't you?
Not all of it.
You
in
like
fact,
what, Tomahawk?
Some of it, yeah. Absolutely.
Faith
yeah,
No More?
God Hates a Coward. No, not a big Faith No More fan.
Don't care for that, okay.
No, it's
all
weird.
Right. That's all right.
Because it's like...
Mike's a little out there.
He is.
But he got
he
more
is.
Out there
but he's
other
super.
Than a Faith No
oh,
More.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he's so dang prolific. I tried to, unsuccessfully, to get signed to his label, Ipecac, and Andy Partridge of XTC's label, Ape. No takers on either end. I'm like, okay, I'll start a record label. Uh-huh. That's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah. Now we're gonna get there, but we're still talking
oh,
about
yeah.
releases.
Yeah, yeah, right. About
I'm
releases.
Not gonna let you get there till we're ready.
Yeah. Are we talking regional releases or
whatever.
Just all time?
Hey, I mean, local music. Have there been any local bands through the years that you've been a fan of?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love Government Cheese mm-hmm. for their live presence. The Late Show, I think, finally got a great album. You know, they've always, mm-hmm. to me, been a superior live act. Their live performances always, for me personally, overshadowed their recordings.
A lot of bands are like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And some vice versa. Some people
absolutely.
Are great studio bands and
yeah.
they can't pull it off on stage.
You listen to the records, you're like, oh, I got to go see these
yeah,
guys.
And
then when
like,
you go
y'all
see
suck.
Them, you're like, I could have stayed home and saved my money.
Right. And listened
yeah.
to it good.
Yeah.
But that Late Show album, I think, is a masterpiece. They finally just knocked it out of the park. And then again, another moment of, this is the one that's going to put them on the world stage. This is going to be the one.
Yeah.
They're finally going to get their comeuppance.
Yeah.
And they do. They've got a documentary underway.
That's
and they,
right.
they play to full houses every place they
that's
play
right.
when it's few and far between.
That's
so,
right. But, we talked to Scott not too long ago, and we kind of talked about that, how they've kind of come full circle with this documentary and everything and their last album, which, as you said, is a really, really good album.
It is fantastic.
Yeah.
And got some great help on it too. So
mm-hmm.
I love the Bowling Green band, the Renaults. They're mm-hmm. like my favorite local band.
Yeah.
I'm just so keen on those guys. Spirit Week.
Aaron
Holder's band.
Yeah.
That's I dig those guys a lot.
And there's a connection and we'll get to that. But how about live bands? What are some of your favorite? Have you been to a lot of live concerts?
Not as much as I would like to. I think Bela Fleck and the Flecktones are one of my all-time favorite recorded bands and live acts.
Yeah.
Through the work I do with the Arts Council in Scottsdale, bringing concerts, I've seen bands that are among my favorite live performances mm-hmm. ever on that tiny stage.
Yeah.
Growing up, I saw Rush on several occasions, saw Yngwie. My dad took me to see Chet Atkins every chance.
How cool is that?
Super cool.
Didn't you meet Les Paul?
Yes, I met Les Paul.
Tell us
about Chet Atkins, too.
Tell us about meeting both of those guys. I mean, those
guys
were legends.
Man, I was on a Les Paul tear. I was obsessed with Les Paul because I heard him on a Louisville AM radio station. It was a song called Sitting on Top of the World.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the guitar. I was like, this has got to be Les Paul. I've read about this guy for years. This is of that time period, and the guitar is just absurd.
Yeah.
I bet it is. And sure enough, it was. So I started buying his music and learning it and covering every bit of Les Paul stuff I could, and went to New York for the very first time in my life, September 2000. And the first day there, I'll look in the paper. Well, look who's playing tonight at the Iridium.
Yeah.
Les Paul.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
It's like meeting at the height of my obsession over an artist, you know, getting to see him, you know, still be able to just tear it up and then get to meet him.
So how was that? Was he just available after the show or did you talk
well,
to someone?
Well, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta, you know, kind of put yourself in the position. Now, I don't think he was officially there to meet and greet people after
yeah.
the show.
Yeah.
You just kind of follow people around.
So you just kind of somehow worked your way in and he's right
yes.
in front of me.
Right.
So what did you say to him? Do you remember?
I said, howdy. And he wrote on his autograph, howdy. You know,
yeah. So you said hi. Will you guys?
Yeah.
Howdy, nice to meet you.
Just you know,
I
tried to convey how much yeah. I loved his music.
Can I have your autograph? And what did he sign?
he signed a postcard from the Iridium.
Yeah.
And I've still got it, and I got a great picture of me meeting him. I guess on a disposable camera is what we had back
You
then.
Got it, so that's all
yeah,
that matters.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
If, even if it's a little cloudy, you got it.
You got it.
What about yeah. Chet Atkins? How'd you meet Chet?
Chet Atkins, I saw him at TPAC on many occasions, but then I finally met him at a Gibson 90th anniversary convention at like mm-hmm. some Marriott or someplace like there.
Yeah.
And
same kind of thing. You just worked your way around.
Yeah, my dad kind of muscled me up there to get to meet him, and they just had released that Gibson that's actually a classical guitar, but it's a solid body, mm-hmm. an electric guitar with a classical neck, and he was kind of promoting that and playing that, and he autographed that picture in the Gibson catalog, and I lost it. It's I know. Didn't that make you
Did
sick?
Did you get a picture with him?
Nope.
Just had an autograph, but you lost the autograph.
Yeah.
It happens.
It happens.
Life sometimes just rolls over stuff.
All the time. What happened to that?
I was just talking to Scott Willis the other day. He was telling us about meeting the Ramones. He got them to sign a paper plate, and he's pretty sure that it got thrown away in the trash from the cheese van.
No. No.
So
no.
It happens, man.
It happens, right?
It happens. So let's talk a little bit about you started your own label.
Right. And label is a really loose term. you think of...
You're recording bands and releasing product.
Yeah. I mean, technically, it's Farm Out Records. And that is what the industry calls a true independent label. There are lots of independent record labels that are actually controlled and bankrolled by the major labels.
Of course.
But a true independent is totally a homemade operation.
You're mowing the yards to get the money, right?
That's right.
Back to mowing the yards.
I'm still mowing the lawns. That's right. My night job.
That's right. So how long has Farm Out been going strong?
Formed loosely in 2006 by yours truly, presumably to pay myself handsomely to record and release my 350-plus original works.
Uh-huh.
Along the way, it was discovered what a... money loser that was, and to wisely hitch my wagon to many another upcoming star. So it is a developmental springboard for my students and select regional artists. Mm-hmm. And I think we have just at 30 formal releases since 2006, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would ask you to name off some of your maybe students that some folks may have heard of, but I'm concerned
absolutely.
Maybe you might forget somebody. I mean, but
that's the nature of stuff. Okay. People are going to forget stuff. Okay. I can think of a few off the top of my head that I feel are noteworthy. Well, a lot of students have actually played on my recordings, mm-hmm. which is neat to give somebody their first taste of studio protocol and
what it's like to do it and do it again.
Yeah,
to get it right. Yeah.
Right. That's the magic of studio. You can take 1,000 swings to get a part just right. You get one swing on stage.
That's right. And if you mess up, you do it 3 more times because you meant to do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I guess, in recent years, I've got to work with a young artist out of Glasgow, that's a prolific songwriter. She goes by her stage name, Palmer St. Clair,
mm-hmm.
And she's been a guest on Home Cooking a few times. She did a single when she was 14 or 15 and then followed up with an EP a year and a half ago when she was 16. She's now a senior, mm-hmm. and has been working on an album for close to a year and a half, mm-hmm. and I think it's set for a December release.
Oh,
but
nice.
Been a lot of fun to work on. I love to work with an artist that prolific that just churns out just original quality material over mm-hmm. and over and over again. It's good training for me. I ultimately want to be a producer. I pretend on a daily basis to be the great David Barrick, who is, very influential in me wanting to do this. What he affords artists to breathe life into their ideas and get into the ears and eyes of the public. That's something I wanted to do as well. Not for myself.
You shouldn't say wanted. You should say want, because I'm sure when Dave first started out, he was, okay. And then he became Dave Barrick.
Right. But even when Dave was okay, people that weren't okay, mm-hmm. he was still the David Bear because nobody else had the magic button to, uh-huh. You know, capture that stuff. I mean, people did, but that's the first experience I had.
But you someday may be the dude as well.
Well, I'm me.
Yeah.
I'm me. I'm not the same, but...
you don't want to be Dave. Dave's Dave. You want to be Dave. Johnny.
I do some days, yeah, yeah. I really do.
Yeah. So you named off Palmer, some others.
Kenzie Crow and the Flaming Hots.
Yeah, when are they going to put out some new music?
They are turning the studio. They're doing at least 2-3 new songs that they've worked up. So mm-hmm. looking forward to that.
Yeah. Talented band, but I think we've only gotten one song for them, right?
One song.
Yeah.
Well, they're the house band that at open mic, so I get to hear them once a month. I get to hear all their covers and originals, at least on a monthly basis.
So who else? Name a few more. A little more love.
Well, the studio partner is Sean Rice.
Yeah.
He's a great drummer. He's been my drummer since probably... He's in high school. I was dragging him around to gigs that he probably didn't need to be playing. Deviltown Burlesque and you know, Halloween up in Lexington. And he was a kid. And he's 28 now. And in addition to being a great drummer and can operate the big machine of the studio better than I can as mm-hmm. far as the editing and mastering, he's a very great songwriter, mm-hmm. a super multi-instrumentalist and great songwriter. He performs under a pseudonym, but I've loved the two releases he's done on the label, and he's kind of like me with my last album. We both have had an album in various stages of completion for over 4 years now. Mm-hmm. It's just...
Well, let's talk about that. Some releases that you've done. I mean, we kind of left off at Envious State, and we kind of jumped ahead. But you've released a couple of things in a few years, some Christmas CDs and some other stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I love Christmas music. You spend, you know, your fourth year of giving lessons, you realize, like, man, I'm turning these Christmas songs each year into kind of my own style or my own version of these Christmas songs. Uh-huh. I want to record these at some point. Yeah, you know, Envious State did my first CD that I ever released was with the band Envious State, and we did that at the Stockyard in Glasgow. That was 24-track digital. Yeah. That's where I became a fan of digital. I know the purists will poo-poo it. I'm a digital guy.
Yeah.
All the way. I love digital. So, once I got a digital recording facility of my own, there was Haro. That was in 2008, maybe. Mm-hmm. It's a Johnny Thompson kind of Christmas magic feeling. Volumes 1, 2, and 3 all came out 3 years in a row around that time. Oldsmophilia, which was the jazz standards album I did, and then Absurdia was another kind of 4-year project it mm-hmm. took for me to get it out of the hangar doorway onto the tarmac and out into the world.
Aren't I on one of those somewhere?
You're on Haro.
That's what
absolutely.
I thought. Where am I?
Twice on the song 437. Just YouTube 437 and find the one by Johnny Thompson. You know, there's a great Tommy Starr cameo in that.
Okay. I was thinking when you said that, I was like, hey, wait a minute.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think Jay Spade's on one of them too.
Spade played on Absurdia. He did all the scratch DJ work on the song Cut to the Mace. Uh-huh. Put that on YouTube. Cut to the Mace, Johnny Thompson, and you can hear Jay Spade's awesome DJ work on that too.
So after that, was that the last so far?
I think so. No, well, I tell you what, I don't think of this as counting, but it does. The Park Avenue Dregs regrouped this past a year ago this July at Goldsmith Studios in Louisville and did a 4-song EP. This is all ancient, you know, close to 30-year-old music mm-hmm. that never got recorded. So we just relearned it and recorded it. That was a lot of fun.
So that's perfect because I was going to go there to kind of wrap it up. And
right.
You've kind of done that yourself a little bit.
Yeah, right?
So is this the original lineup from back in the day? Who's in the band?
It was just me, Pete Lentz, and Keith Herrick.
Going back 30 years.
Donnie Bott, who we've all had as roommates back in the day.
Yeah.
He was the first person to say, here's a 4-track recorder. Yeah, borrow it and use it for a week. And I was like, that was my next electric guitar-itis was, you know, I've got to get a four track at all costs. If I have to work two jobs, I got to get one.
Wait a minute. Do you have one now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've
run them into the ground.
Yeah,
I don't. I have one on a shelf. I use it for trickery. Tape is magic. You can do cool stuff with tape that's not practical in the digital realm. So
I know you bought something a year or two ago, but you were having a lot of trouble with it.
Because I'm a technoramus. I'll tell you what I bought was a 24-track digital recording studio. A DAW, they call it.
Did you ever get that thing up and running right?
Yeah, that's what I use now.
So it's all good?
No.
Well, what was the one thing you were using? Was it a Tascam or something?
No, I had a Boss BR-1180, which is a toy by the industry standards. But I tell you what, I've run three or four of those into the ground. And my best release work to date was done on that little 8-track. I can run it like a top.
Well, you know, it goes back to like we're talking about guitars earlier. A really good guitar player can take a piece of crap and make it sound
it's
like,
all
holy
in the hands.
Cow. Yeah. So, I mean, I can understand that the equipment somehow can affect it, but you got to have the talent, man.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. And there's lots of different kinds of talent. But yeah, it is ultimately the person driving the machine.
That's
Ted
right.
Nugent playing Eddie Van Halen's rig sounds like Ted Nugent playing Eddie Van Halen's rig.
That's right.
You can't get.
That's right.
It just depends. You got to make use of available tools, though, always.
So you're still working with a lot of folks right now and slowly but surely working on your next release for you.
Yes.
Do you have any idea when that will see the light of day?
No, I do not. I'm hoping, always hoping. But, you know, after you give lessons for 6 hours straight with no break, it's hard to kind of get out of your chair and go, all right, time to do a million swings on getting this part right. But I do a little bit at a time. So that album will probably come out next year. I want to get a single by a student named Landon Moore, the Kenzie Crow next singles, and then Palmer's album out the gate by the end of this year. So I can focus on that.
And one last thing, and I hope it doesn't hit you the wrong way, but tell us what about Doodad.
Oh, God, no, I'm so glad you brought that up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been enough time passed. Yeah, I had, you know, living here in Allen County, in the middle of nowhere, basically. I mean, for somebody that grew up in suburban Nashville, it's worlds apart from the life I knew growing up. Certainly worlds apart from living in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
One of the silver linings of I guess, leaving civilization as we know it is that you get to have pretty much whatever you want. You don't have to worry about your animals bothering people because there are no people around to bother. So you wind up with every variety of fowl under the sun. You wind up thinking goats are a good idea. And suddenly there's a sheep, you got pigs, and it's an old McDonald's nightmare. Somewhere along the way, I was told, we're bringing a cow over there. I was like, don't do it. I don't want a cow. Don't do it.
Let's tell people, you live kind of in the country now on a little farm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Just make sure they know where we're going with this.
I've wound up being a farmer. That's where the other farmers go, don't quit your day job.
Yeah.
But there's no money in music. I know. I'll get into farming.
Yeah.
No, no, no.
So they say, we're going to bring you a cow.
Bring me a cow. And so this thing was tiny. It was a runt. It was abandoned. And I remember draping it over my shoulders like a drawing in a Sunday school book. And it immediately diarrhea down the back of my neck and off my shoulder. It was love.
Uh-huh.
I bottle raised that thing. And he turned into an aurochs. He was a mythical beast. And to be honest, I was terrified of him at times because he was a dog. There was no other cows around. He didn't know what he was.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no herd mentality, but there was always kind of, you know. So during the time I had him, he was, became a mascot, a talisman of sorts. Mm-hmm. He was like a source of power or self-confidence in me because, you know, I would stand on his back and ride around. It was like having a pet dragon, a Biceratops.
Let's make sure they understand that this little cow turned into a full-grown bull with
like,
horns
right,
and the
like
whole
the
deal.
Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Yeah.
It was like that.
And he was your buddy.
Absolutely.
You sat on him, walked on him,
Inseparable ran around chops. Yes. I was a big runner for years, and he would terrorize me the length of my daily 5 mile trek. I was like, are you playing or you've decided to braid my legs and kill me?
So Johnny Thompson, at one time, sadly, Doodad is no longer with us.
He's no longer with us. He's left the building, but I bought my farm for him.
Full-grown bull is a pet.
Yeah, I had to get rid of him. I'm like, I'm not getting rid of him. Buy a farm if I have to and put him in it. So, yeah.
That's cool.
He was a great influence in my life. I miss him every day because he got replaced a few years later with two beige dum-dums that I can't stand. They're tearing everything up because there's two of them, and now they figured out they're cows.
Uh-huh.
They know what they are, and they've got the herd mentality. Just ungrateful, destructive candidates for Hamburger University. I'm through with it. I love them so. Yeah. God, I love them.
So you started way back years and years ago. You moved up to BG. You're going to be a veterinarian, and now you've got a little farm
it's
going.
So bizarre.
Full of little farm animals.
Didn't think I had the stomach for it.
Yeah.
More blood and gore, animal crisis situations on a day-to-day basis on any working farm, no matter what its size. So, yeah, you get numbed all that.
So you have to just remind your parents that you did kind of turn into what they wanted.
They know. They're super, super proud of me, which is weird to say. Yeah. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
There's no feeling like that in the world to have parents go, you made good after all.
So we're going to wrap it up. Do you have anything that you would like to throw in before we hit the stop button? Anything at all?
I guess just to remind the listenership, you know, what a great resource this is for somebody to archive, you know, segments that make up the whole of a regional music scene. What a neat undertaking this is, and to remind everybody that all music is regional music. It's somebody's regional music. There are world-class performers in this area I would put up against anything. It's astounding, and that's just the stuff we know of.
That's true.
There's stuff that's up and coming and stuff that people don't want to make a spectacle of themselves, and they keep it, you know, between them and their neighbors.
That's right.
So, I just, if you love music, whether you're playing it or not, you know, there's so many opportunities to either support it by seeing it live or support it by adding it to your library. There's a world of stuff. So, please support local music. It is a long shot for anybody to pursue that. This is as their life's calling, but you, if it's where your heart lies, you don't have much of a choice. You're going to do it no matter what.
That's right.
So,
dude, that's like a commercial right there. I'm going to push the button. We're going to stop it because if we say anything else, it's going to screw it all up, okay?
Thank you so much for having me up. This was a treat.
You probably made them cry.
I hope so. It's my job description.